Good to have you here. Good afternoon to you. And the President of the United States has just begun a press conference that we'll pick up from the beginning and see where it's going, if you guys are able to do that in the booth there.
Their third set of leaders, a little bit gone, but for the most part, and
live from
frankly,
France,
I think that's
on WJR.
Regime change. I think they're going to behave much differently. I think they see a different way of life that they were never exposed to. So the one thing I didn't want to see is I didn't want to see economic catastrophe. If you kept this going, that could have happened. But all I know is every time we talked about the possibility of peace, the stock market shot up like a rocket ship. It never went down. They didn't like it. The people, you know, the stock market is more brilliant than anybody there is, including the people on the stage, other than me, of course. Let's see. I don't know. What do you think, Scott? Is the stock market more brilliant than you?
No, sir.
That's a terrible statement. All right. The stock market is quite brilliant. And every time we said something amazing, like we're going to settle, it would go up. And every time we said something negative, like, guess what? We're not going to be able to settle, it would go down very big, Peter. Right? Very, very big. Tells you something. And, you know, I've studied presidents, some good, some bad, some great. Not too many are great, and some really bad. We had one just recently. And the one president I did not want to be was the late, great Herbert Hoover. I didn't want that. And who knows what would have happened. But bad things happen. So the past 2 days have provided a chance to discuss the details of the deal with the closest friends and allies, the heads of countries. They were all here, a lot of them, far more than the seven, as you know, a lot of them. And they put out a statement. I think President Macron, who did a great job, by the way, did a really fan, him and Bridget, they did a great job, but they all put out statements saying they love this deal because they want to see it over. And they love the fact that the hormones, don't forget, if we were going to drop bombs, let's say we went another month, another 2-3 months, maybe weeks, could be another 3 months, could be whatever. What do you have left? That may be nothing, but you don't have, the strait will never be open. Because people that own billion-dollar ships, these ships cost $1 billion. They don't like sailing ships or having their ships participate when you go up the coast and you go through the strait and there are rockets flying over your head. They want to protect their billion-dollar investment. You wouldn't have oil for maybe years. These are stupid people. But nobody was tougher than me. Nobody hit Soleimani. You know, when I hit Soleimani, people thought that was the biggest thing to happen in the Middle East for 50 years. That was the biggest event. He was the boss of Iran and respected, but he was a mad genius. He was a genius, the father of the roadside bomb. When you see young men, and in some cases women, mostly men, walking around without legs, without arms, with a face that's been blown.
Well, again, leave it at that. Walking around without legs, I think I understand what he means, and I'm sure he's going to get to the point, and we're going to pick him back up in just a couple of minutes. But not a good look to start with by criticizing virtually all the former presidents of the United States to an international crowd. I'm sorry. That just doesn't play well with me. And, you know, I don't want to have to go to the crowds that are here from around the world for their football, our soccer, and hear how much they love America. I love hearing, and I've talked about it in years gone by, the people who love America the most are the people who are here, came from other countries or whatever. And now we're getting a good dose of that from people who are not moving here, but are just visiting and loving what they see.
Yeah, and it's stuff we take for granted.
Take it for granted, and I don't want to hear our president saying to the world how bad we are or what bad presidents we've had. I'm sorry. It just doesn't wear well with me right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially because so far this deal is holding. We'll see if it makes it to Friday. But that's such an easy, positive thing that he could be focusing on. Instead of talking about, you know, how bad other presidents messed this up in the past, you could just take a victory lap and say, hey, we got it done.
And I'm assuming he's going to get around to that. But right now, he's just going over all of the great things that he did, and that's great. I'm not against him talking about the great things that he did, but a time and a place. And the time now is to talk about what is really supposedly happening as of this Friday that will be good for America and for the world. That's all. I mean, that's what I'm hoping he's going to get to. And we're going to get back to him. Right now, he's talking about the bad job that President Obama did. I don't disagree with him on many of these things. I just disagree with time and place and the repetitive nature of how he goes on and on and on about these things. And this is especially important. He has an international audience, which is why he wants to do this right now. But we don't really need to know all of the bad stuff of the past as he sees it, or that it really even was. Let's get to the good stuff. That's why we're here.
Yeah, and, you know, he said that, and this memorandum, this thing has been released. It's been out there so people can read it for themselves, but you know, he said he was going to have a press conference where he was going to read it and explain it to us, and this is the perfect opportunity for it. And we don't need, like you said, Paul, we don't need all the fluff about how messed up this has been in the past. I think the fact that there is a new deal, that's enough to celebrate without having to rehash your version of history.
And as far as reading it, I kind of thought that was possibly what he would do Friday. I hadn't really thought that he would read it today.
Right.
But there are a lot of questions people have about it, and he's supposedly going to be taking questions from the press, which would be the world press, which he already has said in various press conferences that he likes the world press a lot more than the press he has to deal with on a regular basis in America. Because he felt they were being kind to him. All right, we're going to take care of some business. We're going to come back, and we're going to see if the president has yet gotten to what he said he's going to talk about. That's why we're here in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. All right, we're going to go back to the president. He said that his world is about making deals, and the powers in the world, the U.S., followed by Russia and China. But now he's saying something about that they're most likely going to sign a deal Friday. Let's listen to where he is now in France.
Only a few that could do it. They would be nuked. They wouldn't have that country long. So it's a very dangerous thing for somebody to do. But I wanted it in there. So it's develop, procure, buy, anything. And you'll see that when you see the agreement, but it's appropriate that we release the agreement. And we did send a copy to Israel, by the way. They've been a good partner. Again, I think they could do better with respect to Hezbollah. I'm not saying they shouldn't protect themselves. I'm saying when two drones are shot into the desert and drop harmlessly, you don't have to knock down buildings in Beirut. They could behave better. And frankly, they could do a better job. I love them as a partner. They were terrific. But they could do a much better job with Hezbollah. On that, I don't think they're doing well. And I feel very bad for Lebanon. Lebanon's been, you know, it was a great culture. They had the professors, the doctors, the lawyers. It was an incredible culture, maybe the highest in the Middle East for years and years, centuries. And for the last 50, 60 years, they have been just trashed. They have been living in hell. So they'll work closely with us to turn over the so-called enriched material that's very deep in the bowels of the earth, very deep. Nobody can get it. So it's not important that we do it quickly, but we could do it fairly quickly. When we have a chance, we'll do it. But in the meantime, we have cameras on every inch of it. Nobody can do it. And if they do, we'll hit them with Patriots. That's all. And they'll be gone. And they know that. Technical discussions on the removal of all stockpiles of enriched materials will begin immediately. We're going to start that immediately. And unlike Barack Hussein Obama, who sent Iran pallets of cash and any relief they receive under this deal, they'll have to get based on merit. And it won't be from us. We don't have to give them anything. But some people may want to invest. Like, what are you going to do? Say you can never, ever invest in a country? I mean, it's pretty tough. I don't mind being tough, but it's pretty crazy. You can invest in a country. You can invest in any country you want, but you can't invest there. Well, they need investment because we did $1.5 trillion, maybe $2 trillion worth of damage. So somebody's going to have to help them out. There's no guarantee about helping them out, and could be their neighbors will help them out a little bit. I don't know. But it's a lot of money. Almost nobody has that kind of money. That's the kind of damage that was done. But we're not investing any money. There was a fake story. There was a fake news story that got a good person, J.D., made a statement. It was a perfect statement. And they reported it in a very strange way. But that's why it's fake news, I guess. So we don't give them money. We don't give them any of that. And what happens is, with time, if they behave, if they be a citizen of the world, a reasonable citizen of the world, and I think this group, again, I think I didn't do this for regime change, but I think this group is regime change. I mean, hey, the first group is dead. One little morning, having breakfast, the whole group, they thought they'd never be caught because we never bombed during breakfast, but we bombed. And they all, 88 people, and I'm not proud of it at all, but the second group came in and they were very unreasonable too. And they were all gone. They were all gone. And then the third group, we've been dealing with them. A couple left this planet, but we've been dealing with them. And again, they've been fine. I mean, I've had a lot easier. I've had some easier ones. They're tough, they're smart. Maritime traffic through the Strait of Hormuz has already increased very substantially, and the normal flow of energy will resume in the coming days, and trillions of dollars will be made by the world, and the stock market will, I believe, continue to rise. The only difference is that a player that's very volatile, very tough, very smart, frankly, you know, they have in one way a primitive culture, but it's also a genius primitive culture. They're very smart people, very good negotiators, but so are we. So rather than possibly going into a depression, rather than having your favorite president be Herbert Hoover, I was always the one I didn't want to be. I wouldn't have preferred Nixon. I wouldn't have preferred, there were plenty I wouldn't prefer, but the one I always thought of, Herbert Hoover, and he caused it. He raised taxes too fast, and he raised interest rates too fast, all at the same time. And it caused the Great Depression. So I don't think I'll make mistakes like that. I lower taxes, I don't raise taxes. In fact, we just gave you the largest tax decrease, largest tax cut in the history of our country. So we'll be working on a parallel effort with the Gulf nations to address non-nuclear issues, such as the conventional ballistic missiles, which we'll be talking about, and support them. I mean, they have to have some because other people have some. You got to have some. Somebody said, you shouldn't give them one. I mean, I have guys. I like some of these guys. But I don't think they're smart. Sir, you shouldn't let them have any missile. I said, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to let Saudi Arabia have missiles, but they can't have them? Yes, sir. It doesn't work that way, you know? It doesn't work that way. And missiles aren't the problem. Missiles are, they hurt a little location, but they don't blow up the planet. So the Gulf nations will address the non-nuclear issues. We'll be talking about the ballistic missiles, and we'll talk also about the terrorist proxies that they have, that we don't want that to happen. But I want to thank our partners in both Pakistan and Qatar. These people work so hard. And they knew him a little bit. In the case of Pakistan, quite well. In the case of Qatar, they were sort of at odds. And, you know, Qatar was great because they had right next door. When I flew from there, from that location to Saudi Arabia, I'd fly for 40 minutes, and I'd fly to UAE for 40 minutes to great leaders there, by the way. In the case of Saudi Arabia, the father's still alive, and he's fantastic, and the son is going to be great. He's going to be great. The crown prince and Mohammed at UAE is an incredible warrior. He was dropping bombs last week. I said, who the hell's dropping all those bombs? It was UAE. He's a good fighter, Mohammed. But every administration for decades has sought to get Iran to relinquish its nuclear ambitions, but the threat only got bigger. The words got bigger and bigger and stronger and bigger, and nothing ever happened. And Iran got stronger and tougher. If we didn't blow them up the first time and then blow out those weapons, they would have been unstoppable. This should have done, what I'm doing and what I did should have been done years ago. Would have been much easier, much less firepower. But it wasn't. And again, I want to thank all those countries, and I want to thank Israel and Bibi Netanyahu. So obviously, the breakthrough would not have been possible without the unprecedented pressure the United States put on the regime over the past year and a half. But again, it started a long time ago. It started with the death of Soleimani. That was a big deal. No president in history has ever been tougher on Iran than I have, and they know that. And by the way, if they don't honor the agreement, or some things aren't even mentioned in the agreement, it's a memorandum of understanding, but we have an understanding of certain things without writing it. And if they don't honor that, we'll probably go back to bombing them until they honor it, you know? It's amazing what bombs can do. So I say it. The Obama deal was a road to a nuclear weapon, and let's call it the Trump deal, was a wall for a nuclear weapon that the nuclear weapon could not get through. Nobody's going to get through it. We built a wall. They weren't going to have it, and that's what we have right now. And it says very clearly, the most important clause to me, too, number one, the strait opens, but that's much less important than the other clause, clause number whatever, 5, 8. Is a very strong statement that they will never have a nuclear weapon. And it doesn't say they'll have one in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. With Obama, they were able to enrich very quickly. This agreement now provides Iran with a historic opportunity. If they follow the path of cooperation, we'll have opened for them. Their country will have a chance to survive. Now think of it, you know, they have 91 million people. People want me to bomb the bridges. Why don't I bomb? I already did because, you know, they went back on one of their promises and I bombed their biggest bridge, the equivalent of the George. That was the George Washington Bridge of Iran. But we bombed that bridge. You saw that. One quick strike by an F-22, the most beautiful fighter jet ever made, by the way. In fact, we're ordering some more of them. We're bringing it out because it's so effective. It's incredible. It's incredible. Well, look, we have the greatest military in the world. Those B-2 bombers are unbelievable. Who would have thought they could handle, each had two because the flight was so long, but they handle three of the biggest, heaviest bombs, hundreds of thousands of pounds, and they handle them like they're nothing. It's amazing. And also, they're undetectable. They flew into Iran. Totally, think of it, totally undetected. Now, Iran's waiting for them. They're waiting for them. And they never saw them. 1 o'clock in the morning. They never saw them. They're stealth. And we just ordered 22 more. The newer, upgraded version, which I guess is better. I don't know how the hell you get better. But as I expressed to the world leaders here this week, it's my hope that the peace agreement will be the beginning of a much larger deal all across the Middle East. We're very close. Look at the job we've done in Gaza. Look at Hamas. Hamas has been very silent. You haven't read anything about Hamas, and we're trying to get them unarmed. You know, they grew up.
All right, we're listening to the president live in France and getting to the point of the Iran deal, and he's going to be, we were told, answering questions from the world media. We'll see. We're going to continue it, but we also have to move some things around here and take care of business best we can. But we're going right back to the president in just a moment. Now, the president just said again he felt that Israel could do a better job in Lebanon. He hopes to expand the Abraham Accords. He talked about Biden letting in thousands of criminals. And let's go back live in Evian, Lorraine, I don't know how to say it, Evian, France, at the G7 in this international press conference with President Trump.
In our session yesterday afternoon on international partnerships, I offered an update on how the United States is leading the world in responding to the Ebola outbreak in Africa, sending $375 million in aid so far to help stop and contain the crisis at its source. And we've done great. I was with the president of a couple of presidents came over, by the way, from African nations, and they were so happy with what we did. But where it's unfair is we gave $375 million. The rest of the world gave essentially nothing, maybe a couple of bucks, but nothing. And they were all saying, thank you so much. And I think they've done a good job. It's a terrible thing. Ebola is a terrible thing. That's an unbelievable one. Fortunately, it's not like COVID where it's that easy to spread around, but it's rough. And we've done a good job. We've moved people to certain quarantines, certain locations. But today we also had excellent meetings on the economy and artificial intelligence, which is amazing what's going on with that. It's going to be the biggest thing ever. We have to be very careful with it. It's both great and could be bad. We have to be careful with it. But we're leading China. We're leading the world on that. We're allowing them to do their own electric plants because they need, as an example, those buildings are so big. And they're not taking the community's electricity. I gave them the right. It's my idea. I gave them the right to build electric plants like Con Edison in New York. Dig we must. And they've come up with plants that nobody's ever seen anything like them. Those are by very high IQ people. So they're actually building electric plants. So because otherwise they could never build a building because the grid is old and tired and broken and a mess. So they're building it and they're going to sell their very cheaply. They're going to sell their additional, their extra electricity into the grid. So we take care of a lot of things like California, which doesn't have nearly enough electricity. They don't know what they're doing there. And instead of having blackouts and brownouts, they'll be able not to. We found a great deal of unity here at the G7, and we signed a declaration on illegal immigration, the first time ever for a G7 statement. They did a beautiful statement. We signed other agreements to step up and to really coordinate and spend a lot of time coordinating drug trafficking and the stopping of drug trafficking, which is crazy. It comes through Mexico, comes through the southern border, the little that comes through. They find a way, they put it, they're genius. If they would use that genius for good, they'd be very rich people. They have it in engines, they have it in hubcaps, they have it in areas you wouldn't even believe. They have it in the structures of cars. Most incredible thing. But we've done a great job on it. We have drugs coming through the border are down 61%. Drugs coming through water, the sea, ocean, sea, Gulf, down 97.2%. That's the ones that get hit. Just like we hit the Iranian minesweepers and mine droppers, they call them. They dropped. Who would have 28 mine droppers? Who has 28 mine droppers? They actually had them, but they don't have many more. We hit them just like we hit the drug dealers. But drugs are down by water, 97%. And over 60% they're down. And now we're going to go and focus on the land. They come through Mexico. Mexico has lost control of their country. The cartels run Mexico. And it's sad. And the president is a very good woman, but she's a very scared woman. The drug cartels are totally running Mexico. It's not even close. We agreed to accelerate our efforts to secure our critical minerals and rare earth supply chains, where we have great companies really going to town. We're going to give everybody a big run because we do it better than, and we had to get motivated. The G7 also agreed that the United States' new approach to international development based on the private sector investment is working at levels that they never thought possible. It's really working. I held a number of very positive bilateral meetings, including with the president of France. It was a very good meeting, actually. The emir of Qatar, Sheikh Tamim, who's, I tell you, I wish I could really know the guy. You know, some people say, well, he lived in that neighborhood. You can't be saying things that you'd like to have him say. He was fantastic on this, and he's been a fantastic guy in terms of energy and getting energy out there. President of the United Arab Emirates, Mohammed bin Zayed, who's an amazing warrior. President El-Sisi of Egypt. Prime Minister Modi of India. We spent a long time together today. I spoke to Mohammed. I spoke to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia a number of times. They're all so happy that they're still. You have to have them happy too, you know. We're using their airports. Not that they could stop us if we didn't want them to, but it'd be nice that I went to get that little sucker. But I missed.
Just I wanted missed. To fly.
But we spoke to all of them and many countries all over the world. Every country, I think Israel too. Look, think of what Israel's getting. They're not going to be nuked. It's very simple. I told Bibi, Bibi, your biggest risk was that they drop a nuclear weapon into the middle of Israel. They'd only need one, and there would be no more Israel. Think of it, Bibi. You got the best, the most important thing that you were asking for is that. So I think they're happy. Some people are going to be, not him, but there are some people, some writers, some that I thought were friends of mine, but I don't want them as friends anymore because they're either stupid or they're bad people. But we stopped nuclear holocaust, and it stopped too. I mean, there's not going to be any of that. So from the beginning to the end, it was clear that this week, America's back. It's bigger and better and stronger. We're more respected as a country right now, I think, than we ever have been. And we were a laughingstock 2 years ago. They would laugh at us. We had a man that should have never been there. You know that. A man that would walk up to a podium once every year, and they'd ask him, what flavor ice cream do you like? I like vanilla. Then he'd try and find the stairs, which he couldn't find most of the time, and he'd leave. This is very unfair reporting, and then you said you didn't know about that. You didn't know there was something wrong. We can never let that happen to our country again. To me, the worst. We had the worst inflation ever. We had the worst in prices and the costs. It's all coming down now because the oil is bringing it down. You're going to see numbers that are going to be amazing.
All right, the president live in France, and the fact checkers have already said it was chocolate chip ice cream. We'll have more of the president, but other stories closer to home. We'll welcome Detroit City Councilman District 3, Scott Benson, coming up in just a moment here with Paul W. Smith on WJR, trying to carry and cover everything that's going on, which is a little busy today coming out of France. When it comes time to call a home services contractor, most people have a major cringe moment. They've heard or experienced nightmare scenarios of bad experiences with home services companies. No one wants to get the runaround, especially when it comes to their home. We're all looking for a contractor that we can trust. This is especially true when it comes to a roofing contractor. That's why you need to call Victor's Home Solutions when you need to repair or replace your roof. They've built their business on taking, well, as good a care of the customer as they do the roof. I know, I was a paying customer when I met them. They've also built their business around three simple promises that they make to every one of us as customers that they work with. Number one, they'll respect your time by being on time to appointments promptly, following up and doing what they say they'll do. Number two, you get a perfect roof installed by their highly skilled roofing crews. Number three, they offer a 50-year leak-free guarantee on every roof they install. No other roofing company can offer you a longer, more comprehensive warranty. Let me say it again. It all comes down to trust. When you hire a roofing contractor, there isn't one I trust more through my own experience than Victor's Home Solutions. Right now, get $500 off a new roof and no interest financing until 2031. Set up your free 21-point roof inspection by calling 866-VICTORS. That's 866-VICTORS. You can go online at victors.com. That's simple, victors.com, or call 866-VICTORS. 1243 WJR. We've got the fireworks show coming up Monday, and once again, yours truly will be hosting the WJR coverage, and it's going to be great. It's going to be the best ever. It always is. This happens to be the, I think it's 68th annual Ford Fireworks scheduled for this Monday. At 7, we'll go on the air, and we'll stay on right through the fireworks, broadcasting the music once again that goes with the fireworks. So if you have your radio with you, if you're there, or if you're in the car, and you can listen to Paul W. Smith, WJR, and the 68th annual fireworks starting at 7 p.m. We'll help with traffic information and everything else that's going on. Meanwhile, in the newspaper today, there's a headline that says expanded fireworks curfew sparks debate. Don't know why. As far as I know, the city council approved yesterday expanding the hours of curfew for unaccompanied minors during this annual Ford fireworks scheduled for this Monday, which they have traditionally imposed a teen curfew during the fireworks event. And we're going to have hundreds of thousands of people downtown. We want everything to go great. That certainly is true of our fine Detroit City Councilman of District 3, Councilman Scott Benson. Councilman Benson, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Paul W., it's been a while. Thank you for the invitation to talk to your constituents and callers.
Well, just so you know, if there's ever anything on your mind and you want to get it out to a lot of people via my show, I want you to call us and let us know. We don't have like a huge staff, so we certainly don't mean to be ignoring you, but we're always open to you. You've got an open mic here, Councilman Benson, and that goes for forever as long as I'm here. Meanwhile, are they just trying to cause us to scratch our heads? But it says that the curfew sparks debate. Why would a curfew that has been traditionally put into place, I think for years, by the city council, why would there be any debate, especially at a time when we're having trouble with these so-called teen takeovers? What can you tell me about that?
Well, Paul W., thank you for the question. And it's a great question. And so when you have democracy, you have a diverse number of voices. You have diversity of voice and diversity of opinions. And you have the same thing here. And so some of my colleagues, they don't support a curfew, but it's a small number. It was, if I'm not mistaken, a six to two vote yesterday. We were only missing one of my colleagues. But some people don't. They don't support curfews. They think we need to look at different ways to manage youth. But I personally, since I've been here, I support the curfew. Teenagers loved. We have different functions. We have different events and outlets and activities for them on the city dime. But unfortunately, at that age, teenagers don't always make the best decision, and they don't always have the best supervision. And we have an international fireworks festival. It's been around for decades, and we need to keep it going. And what we don't need are headlines in the city of Detroit of violence or any type of chaos at our fireworks festival. I want people to feel comfortable coming downtown Detroit to watch the fireworks. I want them to bring their families. I want them to have a great, safe time and have a great experience. And unfortunately, that means that we need to have curfews for teens.
God bless you, Detroit City Councilman, District 3, Scott Benson, for such clear thinking and explaining it to very clearly. And look, this doesn't mean you or me are against coming up with new ways to deal with teenagers if we, in fact, need to come up with other things for them mm-hmm. to do. Being a guy who helped raise nearly $10 million net dollars for children's charities, including for many of those years, Just Pal, the Police Athletic League, there are a lot of outlets for the kids. Maybe we need more. But that's got nothing to do with assuring the safety of the hundreds of thousands of people who are going to come into the city Monday for the fireworks. It's not like you can only have one and not the other. We can have both, but we don't need to experiment on Monday night.
And Paul W., I also want to make it very clear. There is a part of politics, and I call it political theater. And so there also may be that. I'm not saying that's what happened or that's what this is, but there's also the part of political theater. And so when you get your name in a paper, hey, that's a good thing. So There's sometimes it's just political theater as well. We haven't been close to not passing a curfew since I've been here, and I've been here 12 years now. So I'm still confident that we'll have curfews moving forward. But people get a chance. They get a chance to explain themselves. They get a chance to their conscience and how their, what I call your bosses, and your base expect of you. So my base expects order. They want to come downtown. They don't want to have fear of chaos or anything worse happening. And I support that. And so I also have a young child, and I make sure that he's where he needs to be and that he understands the difference between law and order and chaos and being a good resident in the city of Detroit.
God bless you for that. The curfew will start at 8 p.m. on Monday, June 22nd, this coming Monday, for unaccompanied minors under the age of 18. And then it will end at 6 a.m. the next day. And it just makes very good sense. Again, the council approved the fireworks curfew, which is nothing new, by a 6-2 vote. Now, meanwhile, while I have you for a moment here, how's everything else going, Councilman Benson?
Oh, Paul, Devin, glad you asked. Things are going great. We are keeping the lights on in the city of Detroit. The bills are being paid in a timely fashion, and things continue to move in the right direction. We have new leadership in the mayor's office, and we'll continue to work with her to move the city forward, and we don't want to lose the current trajectory of the city. We want to keep growing, we want to keep thriving, and we just want to make sure people feel comfortable coming downtown. I will suggest, if you're coming down for the fireworks, please get here early. It gets very congested early. People start staking out seats in Hart Plaza early. Come downtown, have dinner, have lunch, have a great time with the family. But I do suggest you get here early and be patient when it's time to leave, because you got over 100,000 people who are leaving the downtown after seeing a great fireworks show.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a great fireworks show, one of the best in the country. Mm-hmm. And the Ford fireworks, we thank, again, Tony Michaels and the parade company. He is the wizard of oohs and ahs.
Great job, Tony.
He does a great job. And the city shines, and we want that to continue. We want the stories that are all over the news the next day to be all positive. So
Exactly. Great
cities do what they have to do to make sure that's the case. And that's what you're doing. Councilman Scott Benson, I salute you and the rest of the city council members who understand this. And anytime you want to come on board, you let us know.
Paul W., thank you for the invitation. I'm going to take you up on that.
Please do. Detroit City Councilman Extraordinaire, District 3, Councilman Scott Benson here. Paul W. Smith, the president, still speaking from France. We'll pick it up again on WJR. Well, there's a lot going on today. That's the understatement. It could be argued one of the most important things is what's happening in Evian, France, where they all drink Absolut pure water. And that is the president is giving an address. I'm not sure that he has revealed everything about the Iran deal. I think he's still waiting for Friday, but he is taking some questions at the G7 summit from the world. Let's give that a shot just for at least a moment here.
International law on the attack on Iran?
No, actually the opposite. They felt they were very dangerous. They were very relieved because they could get hit too. They were very relieved. No, we never discussed that. No, it would be the opposite. They broke the law. They killed thousands of people. They killed thousands of our soldiers and hundreds of thousands of people. Yeah, please, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. President?
Yes.
Yesterday, the Pakistan thanks for the Chinese government to help make a peace talk between Iran and the United States. So what do you think about China's work to get the United States and Iran sitting down to talk and make the deal? And the second question is...
Okay, let me answer the question.
Okay.
So I think China's been terrific. I told you that before. They could have been bad. They could have sent in to try and block or break the blockade. They could have sent in an oil ship with six destroyers alongside of it on each side. They didn't do that. President Xi helped me. He tried to help, and I think he probably helped get it solved. You know, they get 50% of their oil from that location. So that wasn't that easy. President Xi was fantastic. He tried to help me solve it. And he didn't give any big weaponry. I guess something, we'll find something somewhere along the line. But he didn't give any big weaponry, I can tell you that. No, I think China was, I couldn't ask for much more. Again, they were impacted because they get more than 50% of their oil from the Hormuz Strait. And no, I thought they were fantastic. Okay, how about one more question right here? Go ahead, please.
The latest YouGov Economist poll shows that Democrats have lost a 5-point edge on the generic congressional ballot. They just have now just a 2-point lead since February. Do you think that they're losing momentum?
Well, I see the Republicans in generics. You know, generics are very important. I don't know how accurate, because I see a lot of bad polls. Polls are very dishonest, just like a lot of reporters, like these people over here are very dishonest. CNN, ABC, it's a whole group of them over there. They're really dishonest people. But, you know, and really networks are very dishonest. And they have to straighten themselves out, or they're not going to be very successful because people don't believe them anymore. But no, the generics are very interesting because the Republicans are coming up strong even before this. You know why they're seeing all these lunatics, like the guy in Maine with the swastika? You know, for 10 years they've been calling me a Nazi. And now they have a Nazi running. He's got a tattoo on him. I've been denying it for 10 years. They know it's not so, but they've been calling. I don't think they can call it to me anymore, you know? One more? Go ahead, Peter. Let me finish with Peter, because he's been better to me than he's been to Biden.
Thank you, President Trump. I have a question about this weekend. Why not stick around for the signing ceremony with this Iran peace deal?
I might.
You might?
Yeah, I might, but I'd rather, this is a memorandum of understanding. It's very important, but it might not be the kind of a document that I should be signing.
There's some element to this where you send the vice president. If it works out, great, you'll look like a genius for sending him. And if it doesn't work out, it's the vice president's
fault. I like that idea, sure. Well, this way, if it works out, I'm going to take the credit. If it doesn't work out, I'm blaming J.D. You better be careful, J.D. He's going to turn his plane around and get the hell out of here. Yeah, I like that idea. I think it's a good idea. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
All right, there's the president. He took questions from people from around the world. You kind of got a feel for what he was saying, what he was doing. And, well, I'll let you decide, and then we'll read all about it in the press after hearing what we've heard, and we'll see how much of it makes sense and how much of it doesn't. You know, there's a lot going on, and most of the reporting on the president, as he says, is negative, Mike. It just is. Like, for example, front page of the Detroit News, taxpayers to pay $300 million for ballroom. Well, wait a second. They got their information from the contractor? Now, when I hire a contractor to do house at my work, if you ask that contractor, there's no way the contractor would have any idea where the money is coming from. All he cares about is he gets paid. He doesn't say, well, Paul's Uncle Bill paid part of this and his Aunt Mary paid a quarter of that. I mean, where does the contractor get the details on what's paid by the American taxpayers and what's paid by private investors? Any idea?
Yeah, no, I don't know, unless maybe there's a little more transparency when it comes to government contracts, that maybe that's why they might know for doing government work versus private work, but that's a complete guess on my part.
The other thing is a kind of a giddy reaction from those that don't like the president regarding the reflecting pond.
Right.
Which, by the way, had an algae problem before. I would that the president hired. He could have gotten people from university, for example,
right,
in their agriculture, any of these lies in so well and for it, and put kind of paint colors, whatever you had to make sure there were, that was there's algae there. Peroxide stuff to try to fix it. You get on, isn't it just called ABC? See this, but on opening news last, you were said after the president billions of dollars bond did not billions of reflecting pond spent millions. Billions have been spent try to get it right, and they've not. So at least, but how could they allow David Muir to make such a mistake and not correct it? And they didn't correct it knowingly until they went to the story later, and he then had changed it to millions of dollars. But the headline to grab our attention was, after the president spent billions of dollars on the reflecting pond, blah, 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 blah. I go back to the fact that I'm loving seeing all of these people who are here from around the world for the World Cup praising, loving, respecting America like so many Americans do not. Yeah, mostly liberals, socialists, Democrats, whatever you call them. These people are loving America. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, too. It's stuff that we don't even think about either. Like, I guess they don't have yellow school buses in Europe. And they're like, oh, my gosh, this is like the magic school bus, the storybooks that we read. They love our...
And we burn them after teams win championships. Right. But that's another story.
Right.
They haven't seen mac and cheese like ours. They haven't seen ranch, hamburgers, cheeseburgers.
Ranch
like
dressing
ours.
Is a big hit with the Europeans.
Yes. Ranch dressing. All the things that we take for granted. And I've said this for years. You know, the people who have moved here to live from other countries really understand what a great country America is. And the kids that have been raised here that are spoiled don't get it. But now we're getting a heavy dose of people who aren't moving here, but who have come here to visit. So many of them from around the world. And the bottom line is simple. They love America.
And I'm wondering if there's going to be a big European ranch dressing boom of 2026.
I don't know. It'll be fine to see. Did I say this on the air the other day? I think I mentioned it to you. Did I tell you that just prior to the 94 World Cup, a Harris Poll survey ranked soccer 67th among Americans' favorite sports? It was one spot behind tractor pulling, which by coming from Monroe and the Monroe County Fair, Stan Deeroff, Jim Miller, you know, tractor pulling was a big deal. But a Gallup poll 30 years later has found that soccer ranks fourth now, just behind baseball in the United States. And probably after these couple of few weeks,
right,
it'll rank maybe higher. I don't know how it's going to surpass, you know, our major sports, but you never know.
It might bump ahead of hockey a little bit.
It could.
Especially,
yeah.
You know, depending on how well the men's team does. I know that when the women's team does well, there's a huge interest in soccer. So I think it depends on how far the U.S. team makes it in the knockout rounds.
In our great state of Michigan alone, nearly 26,000 kids played high school soccer last year, that per the Michigan High School Athletic Association. So it's taking a long time. There's no question. And Roger Faulkner has been pushing it since he got it here in 94. So it's taken a very long time, but it is happening. Hey, here's your chance to win a trip to see Lionel Richie, Earth, Wind, and Fire in the city of your choice. We've got your flights, hotel, concert tickets, and premium VIP lounge access covered. It's your chance to sing along all night long with Lionel Richie and Earth, Wind, and Fire, prize provided by Live Nation. Text this hour's national keyword, devotion, to 95819. That's devotion, D-E-V-O-T-I-O-N, devotion, to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. Play four times each weekday for four chances to win. Official rules and more information at WJR.com. Nick Ford, Director of Corporate Strategy at Ford Motor Company. Tim Clark, NASCAR EVP. Got a big, big thing happening up here for the historic June 21st race at the Naval Base Coronado in San Diego. All the details coming up next year with Paul W. Smith in Focus on WJR. Naval Base Coronado, home to 17 squadrons, 3 aircraft carriers, 4 SEAL teams, Navy, Expeditionary Combat Command Squadrons, and other air, surface, and subsurface commands. Notable commands, including Commander, Naval Air Forces, Naval Surface Force, Pacific Commander, Naval Base Coronado. I mean, that the list goes on and on, but there is a first coming, a big deal. Ahead of NASCAR's historic June 21st race at Naval Base Coronado in San Diego, Ford is bringing together NASCAR, Blue Star Families, and the Zac Brown Band for a major tribute to military families live aboard the USS Midway. To tell us a little bit about it is Bill and Lisa Ford's son, Nick Ford, the next generation, along with his brother Will, who we've had on before, his sister Alexandra. What generation are you now, Nick?
Fifth generation.
So fifth? Wow.
Goes back a while. Yep.
It sure does, and congratulations to you, and I'm sure your mom and dad are obviously very proud of you with the work you're doing as a director of Ford's corporate strategy team. Tell us what you've got planned here on that June 21st race and the time aboard the USS Midway.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it. We have a super exciting week coming up in San Diego. We're really excited to announce the first Proud to Honor Veterans Day Classic race. Supporting the military community has always been a huge priority for Ford going back to day one, and it's very meaningful to our family as well. And in collaboration with our great partner in NASCAR, another awesome American brand, for the first time ever, we're going to deliver a special military tribute race on Veterans Day, honoring all six branches of the military. It'll be on the track with our Mustang Dark Horse R's, with NASCAR drivers, and with an unforgettable concert from the Zac Brown Band, all in support of our amazing military community partners. So it's a really exciting announcement we're ready to make.
This is a big deal and a great announcement, and I know that the NASCAR Executive Vice President, Chief Brand Officer Tim Clark, on the other end of our line, is very excited about this June 21st race and all of the celebration. Right, Tim?
Excited is an understatement, Paul, and appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you. And yeah, this is such a unique and incredible opportunity. There's so many parallels between the sport of NASCAR and the Ford Motor Company and the Ford family. You know, the ability for us to put an event on like this and honor the military families, you know, we jumped at the opportunity.
Nick, this is, I just want to remind people again, you've said it, I'll say it again, but this is an historic first ever NASCAR Cup Series race held on an active U.S. military installation. You've got those Mustang Dark Horse entries. It's going to be also the factory-supported Ford F-150s and the Craftsman Truck Series. The Cup yep. Series, you got four teams like Team Penske, Stewart Haas Racing. This is just going to be spectacular.
It's going to be awesome. I mean, supporting the military community has been such a priority for us and from several different aspects of our business. And to be able to now extend that to our racing business is super exciting. Racing is so core to who we are and as is support of the military. And so to be able to bridge those two worlds in collaboration with NASCAR for an event like this is really great.
It really is, to my way of seeing it, a clear expression of your company, Ford's, generational commitment to those who serve and their families, and how Ford shows up beyond just building vehicles.
That's right, Paul. I think, you know, for our entire 123 history, this is core to who we are. You know, we show up when our country calls. And, you know, just a few months ago, we were named by Time Magazine the most iconic company in American history. We employ the most auto workers in the U.S. We assemble the most vehicles here. I mean, this is really core to what we do, and to, especially for this summer around America 250, what better way to express, you know, our commitment to the military community with an event like this. But, you know, as you said, Paul, this is something that goes back all the way from the beginning, from Arsenal Democracy up until today.
And Tim Clark, NASCAR Executive Vice President, through the longstanding partners like Blue Star Families, TAPS, Travis Manion Foundation, well, that list goes on. And it's got to make you feel good and the whole NASCAR community and family that you have a company like Ford Motor Company continuing to elevate the organizations, doing the real work on the ground, amplifying their impact and driving support where it matters most. That's got to make everybody in the NASCAR community feel very, very good.
There's no question, Paul. And I would say on both a personal and a professional level, I mean, I'm from a military family, third generation, a veteran myself. One of the reasons that I appreciate the opportunity to work in the NASCAR industry as much as I do, and to work in collaboration with Ford, who is similarly minded towards the military and military families, you know, to kick off things with the event in Naval Base Coronado and to put this event on around Veterans Day, I think we couldn't be more excited. And you know, again, to your point, just we're very similarly minded, and I think our motivations are well aligned, and this should be a huge win for everyone.
Well, Nick Ford, along with this incredible live activity aboard the USS Midway, the drivers will finally have to get to that street track, Naval Base Coronado's street circuit on racing, and that's a big deal. I mean, we're looking at a street circuit on a naval air base with varying pavement surfaces, concrete walls, challenging runway sections, and your Ford engineers have been heavily focused on specialized suspension and brake setups for the road course racing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a one-of-a-kind event. You know, the first-ever type of race on a naval base. And as I said before, you know, the racing has been such an important part of our business. I mean, pretty much any given weekend, we're racing all over the world in basically every type of racing series out there. You know, this is our first season as a Formula One engine manufacturer, but you know, NASCAR has always been so core to who we are, and so to be able to participate in an event like this is a huge honor.
Now, I know your brother Will is involved in the racing side of the business, but Nick, have you ever thought about wanting to get behind the wheel and race these cars?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a ton of fun. I think if I can get in a Mustang Dark Horse R and race my brother on a naval base sometime, I'd love that opportunity.
I have a feeling you can probably make that happen.
And we'll make some calls.
Yeah, if there's anything I can do to help, I'd love to be there. Now, Tim Clark, how do people get – are they going to be able to watch this all on television, I hope?
Well, that's the goal, Paul. As they say in show business, there's more to come. We're really excited to make this announcement today. And, you know, we've got a couple of more announcements along the way over the next couple of weeks and months, including – the drivers that will participate and how fans can enjoy this both in person and on television and other forms of media. So a little sneak peek for now, but a lot more to come over the coming weeks.
Well, you got a lot going on, bringing together NASCAR, Ford Motor Company doing all of this, Blue Star Families, the Zac Brown Band, a major tribute to military families, part of it live aboard the USS Midway, and then the first race ever on a military installation. It's a very big deal, and it is coming up Father's Day weekend, and we'll get more information along the way. I want to thank Nick Ford, part of the Ford family, Bill and Lisa's son, and now I think I've done Will, Nick, Alexandra, and I'm not sure who else, certainly Mom and Dad and others, which as you just keep that whole Ford tradition, and congratulations again on Time Magazine calling you Ford, America's number one most iconic company. And thanks to Dan Barbosa of Ford Communications for helping us connect, along with you, Tim Clark, NASCAR Executive Vice President and Chief Brand Officer. This is going to be a great event of many. So I thank you both for coming on board and making that announcement today in Focus with Paul W. Smith. We really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you,
Thanks,
Tim.
Paul.
Thank you, Nick. And we continue in Focus on WJR. Colleges, our big colleges, have been in the news a lot lately, and the news hasn't always been good. Here's some good news coming from my alma mater, University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I welcome the president, Domenico Grasso, to the Paul W. Smith Focus Show. Mr. President, it is a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be here, Paul.
The Look to Michigan initiative underway. It's a very big deal. Tell my listeners about it.
Well, as many of your listeners probably know, higher education's come under fire over the last several years. It goes back even before this administration, probably over a decade, we were starting to lose public confidence. And the University of Michigan has been a major contributor to the success of this nation from its founding in 1817. And we wanted to help higher education earn back the public trust. So we developed this Look to Michigan campaign that really highlights all the wonderful things that this university does for the state of Michigan, for the Ann Arbor, Washtenaw community, and for the nation and world. And that was the essence and the origin of the Look to Michigan campaign. And we've taken out ads, we've highlighted some of the great things that the university has done over the years, and we talk about how it is a major part of why we live the quality life that we live in this country.
President Grasso, you've made it a priority to engage, to listen, discuss issues with the stakeholders of University of Michigan, doing that right here with me on WJR. And you've demonstrated, and we need to just sometimes toot our own horn, how our research at U of M has bettered society, how our healthcare system has improved the quality of life for patients and their families, and frankly, how our alumni changed the world, and I'm proud to be a part of it. I mean, I'm never in a list of one of the distinguished graduates of University of Michigan, but I feel good about being a graduate of the University of Michigan, and for that matter, having my son, Adam W. Smith, our daughter, Natalie Geisinger, from the Penny W. Stamp School of Arts and Design, and daughter, Sophie Smith, from the Ross School of Business. We feel a big part of that. We're the kind of We're the unsung heroes that never get mentioned, and there are millions of us.
We are very proud of all of our alums, and they all go out to do great things. Some of our alums are just better known than others to the broader audience, but our alums make such a difference in the communities that they go in, whether they're local communities, regional, state, global communities. And I think, Paul, that you are selling yourself short because you are a major part of what has become an avenue to reach the public through media. And we're very proud of you at the university.
Well, I appreciate it very often, and I'd like you to use me as often as you can to get the word out. I feel that's very important. Now, you've committed $50 million toward the Center for American Dialogue. You've launched 31 startups in just a year tied to university technologies. I mean, this is all such great stuff. We just need to blow our own horn, especially around a time when our universities appear to be under fire.
You're so absolutely right. We are trying to demonstrate why an investment in higher education is in everybody's best interest. And you're right, we've launched a number of brand new startups this past year, second in the country, only behind MIT. We've launched more than any other university. We've also had the most invention disclosures in the country, only behind MIT once again. So we are trying to make a major difference out there. We've also, in addition to the $50 million that you mentioned for the Center for American Dialogue, we're also investing $250 million in a biotechnology innovation institute that's going to try to help bring new discoveries in the medical field to commercialization faster than ever before. So we are trying to make a very positive impact in the world.
President Grasso, what is your vision of how the University of Michigan should balance commercialization and economic development with its public mission, academic freedom and research integrity?
Well, I think that those go hand in hand, Paul. Let me just say that I know that a lot of folks in Michigan like to say that we're the best public university in the country. And I'd like to change that narrative. I want us to be the best university in the country and in the world in the public interest. So everything we do, whether it's commercialization or development of technologies, we're always looking for we're looking to do that in the public interest. So I think it is part of our public mission to launch companies that go out and improve our economy, change the world. We also educate leaders that go into public service, educate leaders that go into NGOs. We educate leaders in all aspects of our society. So we're very proud of our commitment to the public interest.
I am so proud of you, President Grasso, for speaking up, stepping up and speaking up and doing this. And I feel exactly the same. I don't want to say we're the best public university. We're the best university. And with more than 110 top 10 programs, we just need to let people know and remind them how great U of M is. How should Michigan measure excellence beyond the rankings, President Grasso?
I think that we measure our excellence one graduate and one citizen at a time. When we make a difference in people's lives that we educate and the people that we serve through our inventions and discoveries.
God bless you for this work. Any way we can be of help along the way, please don't hesitate to call.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Paul, for everything you do and your leadership in principled journalism.
How can folks get more information on the Look to Michigan initiative, Mr. President?
We have a Look to Michigan website, and we encourage people to visit it, and many of the great things that we're doing are featured there.
Very good. A Look to Michigan website. Go find it. It's easy to find. And how great it is to say hello to President Domenico Grasso, the president of the University of Michigan. Thank you, sir. I look forward to further conversations down the road.
Thank you. I look forward to them, too. Go Blue.
Wait, focus. Go Blue is right. How could I forget? Go Blue.
Go Blue.
That's right. I almost forgot. We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith, proud graduate of University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, with family members, too. As we continue on WJR. Well, it looks like the president has already, by helicopter, made it to, assuming that's the Geneva airport, to get on Air Force One and come home. You know, I was just thinking, Mike, can you imagine how much a trip like this costs when you have to ship all of those helicopters, all of those vehicles over to Geneva? It's got to be $100 million.
It's probably why Peter Ducey asked, hey, why don't you just stick around until the signing?
For Friday, you just stick around. You spent the money for the trip. What the heck?
Right. It was almost like he was giving him advice because he says, well, if the deal goes to hell, you can just blame it on J.D. Vance.
Yes,
and Donald Trump says, oh, I like that idea.
The president agreed. That's right. If it goes through, I get the credit. If it doesn't, it's J.D.'s fault. Well, whatever. Poor Marco Rubio standing behind him during that whole thing. He probably was hallucinating. But anyway, so I saw this. And we don't have time to really get into it. Maybe tomorrow. But it says here, as the harbinger of bad news, Reuters, thank you, Reuters, many doubt U.S. will last another 250 years.
Oh.
What kind of a question is that? Hey, do you think we'll be around another 250 years?
Yeah, it's a bit
asking
pessimistic.
People that it doesn't matter to at all because
we'll be dead.
Long dead.
Yeah. I just need it to last until I'm, God willing, 80.
Yeah, well, I just want it to last long enough so we can all collect the Social Security money we paid into it.
That's true. Once I get my money back, then whatever happens, happens.
We just want to get the money back that we paid into it, where if we had actually put it in an index fund, we'd all be richer anyway. Oh, man, we got to start teaching kids this in school. I'm going to talk to my friend Ryan Goldberg from DFCU Financial. I think we can make a big move in that area. All right, we're out of time. Ryan Ermani coming up, JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. I hope you'll be staying tuned for that, because I know he's and we'll be with you tomorrow from noon till 2. You go on out, make it a great one. Thanks for realizing that you're making each and every day count, because each day is a gift. And thanks for choosing to be with us, the best and brightest audience in all of radio. Regards, Paul W. Smith.